You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Welcome to episode 69 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello, hello.
And Jay.
Hello. Just one hello for me.
Just one hello. So on this week's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the latest, one of the latest, Warhammer Age of Sigmar battle tomes.
Yeah, we're what, 2 weeks into January and we've got two new battle tomes already?
Yes, so Matt has got his copy of The Disciples of Tzeentch.
It's very tasty.
Next to him. That's not the only Tzeentch thing next to him, but we'll talk about that in the hobby updates in a moment. Very Tzeentch table today.
Yes.
We're also going to be talking about, because in Age of Sigmar at the moment, there's a bit of a surge of Behemoths.
Yeah.
With a lot of them becoming battle line, depending on different
armies. Well, we've always been limited by how many we can take. We're now, yeah, battle line unlocks, loads of awesome, cool options to take them. So, yeah, now, if you like Behemoths, now's the time to get him in your lists.
So, we're going to pick out our top three Behemoths, and you guys have not let us down as always, week on week. You've always come out with the goods. So we'll be reading out your top threes towards the end of the podcast. We've also got quite a bit of news this week.
For a change.
We've got some 40k news in there, so it's not just all the Age of Sigmar this week.
A little bit of 40k.
And I think that about wraps us up, I think. So before we get stuck into the main meat and taters of the podcast.
Meat and taters.
We'll talk about our... don't know where that came from. We'll talk about what we've been doing in the hobby for the past 7 days. So, Jay, would you like to start us off?
I can start us off. I've actually painted more models in the last week than I've probably painted in, like, 6 months total. It's because I've got... about 35 models, about 70% complete. So I've been working on the Dwarves in. Two units of Iron Drakes, a unit of Hammerers, some Gyrocopters, and Gotrek. I'm using... When the Dwarves came out for Warhammer Fantasy 8th edition, there was a White Dwarf article. I actually think, looking back, it was Duncan was painting some Longbeards, and he put a little painting guide into the White Dwarf.
Yeah.
It tells you how to paint the Gromril armour. So I've been using that to paint my Gromril armour. So I'm just going to put this week, put all the gold details on and the gems. And that's all of me infantry done then. And then I'm hoping to spend a week then painting Gotrek.
Awesome.
For the tournament.
So Gotrek's definitely in the list there.
Yeah, well, I've written my list. The only thing I was thinking about doing to make my list a bit stronger is to drop the Hammerers, because I've only got 10 Hammerers in the list and there's only 10 wounds there, 4 plus save. So, and replace them with... 2 units of Tree Revenants, because I'm living city, so you can take some Sylvaneth. And if I take the Tree Revenants, I can use them to spread out on the board a bit more.
Yeah, a bit more board control.
Try and capture some objectives. Or I might just go all Dwarden, I'm not sure. I was thinking about converting some Dwarf Rangers and counting them as Tree Revenants, but I've run out of time to do that. But maybe in the future I'll...
I think you should definitely do that in the future.
Maybe for the team
really
event.
Maybe for the team event, yeah. Just like 2 units of 5 Dwarf Rangers, and then, you know, they've just got the cloaks on, so light armour and... hand weapons, and they can bounce.
Yeah, like, at least you've got the look of your Dwarden army.
Exactly,
then.
Yeah, that's the plan. But otherwise, yeah, it's looking good. So my list has got, it'll have 30 Iron Drakes in, 20 Iron Breakers, 10 Longbeards, 10 Hammerers or Tree Revenants, I don't know what yet, 3 Gyrocopters, a Warden King, 2 Rune Lords, and Gotrek himself.
Excellent. Batch painting, Jay.
Batch painting, yeah.
Batch painting.
Yeah. I mean, the Dwarves are quite easy models to paint because they're mostly just beards and Gromril armour. So.
And they're not very big.
Your army list mostly beard and Gromril armour.
Beard and Gromril armour, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I've only had one game with them. They did all right, didn't they? They blunted a few of your weapons.
They did.
And then died miserably. But I have high hopes for them at the Purple Sparkly Unicorns event.
Well, you're hopefully going to give them a run out on Tuesday if you take them to, because we're going to go to the Unicorns, do a club night. We'll basically just have a game against somebody. It's a good time to test out lists, play against different armies. So.
What I might do there then is I might take the Hammerers and see how I get on, because, I mean, Archaon is a bit of a weird game because he's so strong, anything he touches dies, so no wonder the Hammerers didn't really live very long. So I'll see how the Hammerers get on in a game on.
Let's hope they do all right, Matt, otherwise the Dwarves might be staying in the Village Hall. You might leave them and go...
These are staying because this will be the last normal army I build, because when the Pontiels arrive, they're going to be a strong army.
Excellent. Cool. I'll talk about what I've been doing in the past week. So I have been painting something that I used to enjoy painting years ago, and I've started painting them again, and that is Tau battle suits.
Oh yes,
my days! I love painting Tau battle suits. I like them because it's like painting within the lines.
Yeah,
because they're very crisp plates. And all. Yeah, all the plates and stuff. So I painted a cold star battle suit, which I was really happy with.
Yeah, it can move 80 inches. It's crazy, isn't it? Fire, move 40 inches. Fire again. Fall back another 40 inches. Move on. Fire 40 inches.
I had a bit of a rules query, which has now been clarified that I can only move 6 inches with the Tau artifact, but that's still really good. So I really enjoy painting the Cold Star, and I'm probably about just over 50% done with my Riptide. So I'm definitely picking the biggest models to start painting first.
The Riptide's a mint model.
And I also painted a Tau Fire Warrior as well, because I thought before I get too settled on the scheme, I best make sure it translates okay onto a Fire Warrior mini, and I think it works.
Do you have any vehicles in your list?
Not at the moment. I would like to get a Hammerhead in there, but I really like battle suits.
Battle suits are cool.
And with the new Shadow Sun coming, I'd like a bit of a infiltrating detachment, so Shadow Sun, Stealth Suit, Ghost Keel.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think that'll be really good.
Awesome.
So yeah, I've been painting those three models. Can't remember if I said last week, but I painted an Ogre as well.
Nice.
I may have said that last week. I can't remember.
It all merges together.
It all kind of merges into one. I'm still trying to adjust after the festive season. So, yeah, I painted an Ogre. Whether or not that's new information, I don't know. But I painted an Ogre.
So you're thinking Ogres then?
I am going to be painting Ogres. But it was this top three, actually, this week that got me looking at all my Warhammer. And I actually have quite a few points of Carrion Overlords.
If only there was a new Carrion Overlord book out, Dave.
So you might be unsurprised to hear that next week we're going to be looking at the Carrion Overlords book.
You're allowed to change your mind until the end of January. They're the rules.
Okay. Them's the rules. So I'm going to give them a go. Because another reason why I like the look of the Overlords, besides the fact that their new rules are awesome, especially the Ironclad, it's simply awesome, is I really want to take a list with Gotrek. Because I bought Gotrek, I painted Gotrek. I've wrote lists with him, Stormcast, but I've not had a chance to play with him yet. He's a dwarf, so he deserves to be with his dwarven friends. So I'm thinking of taking a Overlord. I can't pronounce the name of the skyport that allows you to take Druidin allies. Barak Frark? T-H-R-Y something. Anyway, one in four units can be just dwarfs.
Dwarfs.
So I'm thinking of taking, obviously, Overlord heavy list, but with Gotrek and a unit of Fire Slayers, whether they be Vulkite Berserkers or, you mentioned, Half-Guard Berserkers, they're probably a good shout as well.
Yeah.
But that unit is basically a combat delivery system for Gotrek.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So
you're building a Gotrek army.
Yeah.
That's your Gotrek
army. Aerial support from the carriage.
And also, Matt, what I found out, which I think is a bit filthy, potentially, is I was reading online, because I haven't got the book yet. Obviously, I'll be able to clarify all this when I've got the book.
This is Cold Star 18 inches all over again.
But when you add your dwarfs to your
Gotrek cannot move 80 inches to him, no matter what you've read.
When you add dwarfs to your Carrion Overlords, they get the Skyport keyword.
Yep.
Great stuff.
Yep.
So you take Gotrek, he gets the Skyport keyword.
Has Gotrek got the correct keyword, or would he have to be taken as an ally?
No, he's got the Dwarden keyword, I'm pretty sure.
As long as he's got the
Dwarden keyword, this will work. Alright? So you can take him.
He'll get FAQ'd the day before Dave goes to the tournament.
Yeah, he's got the keyword.
Yep.
So you can take him in the Skyport. This Skyport has a once per battle ability that sixes to hit. You pick a unit, sixes to hit are two hits.
Oh, well, that's pretty good.
So you slap that on Gotrek. I mean, not that he really needs it, but I mean, he could be doing even more mental damage.
How long does that last? Because he can pile in again at the end of the combat phase as well.
Not sure how long it lasts. We'll clarify all this next week when I've actually got the book.
And you've always wanted Endless Spell. You can take the artifact with the Endless Spell on the bottle.
Yeah. How amazing is that? Yeah. Yeah. Well, the only problem with that is with the Skyport, you're locked in on your artifact, and the list I've currently built, there is no way I'm going to get a battalion in there.
Oh, well, there was hope there. Well,
there was hope there. So, but yeah, I do like the idea of a Pokeball and the spell. That's great. So, yeah, that's my hobby for the week, really. We did have a game, Matt.
We did have a game. The Tau Empire.
The Tau Empire in their first run out in, what, 24 months? I don't know, last time I played with Tau.
It's been a while.
Probably even longer than that. Against your
The Adeptus Sororitas.
No, I'll let Dave say it.
I'm not saying nothing.
No, go ahead.
If anybody knows,
listeners want to know what army you fought against.
The Sister Battle.
Yeah.
So we had a game. Matt wanted to try out all these new shiny, Necromunda scenery.
Yep.
So we were fighting on like a refinery kind of world.
Yeah, Refinery 13 we named it.
With a big refinery sort of running through the centre. So it was quite open on the two sides of the boards, but it was quite
dense.
Lots of line of sight breaking scenery in the middle of the board. Ironically, we ended up rolling for the deployment where we were sort of fighting with that in the centre, which was pretty cool. Vanguard, is it?
Yeah, that worked quite well because we had to kind of like fight our way through this like stretch of refinery.
Yeah, I made quite a few errors, but I really enjoyed using them and they were really good. And I mean, in Overwatch, I was taking your units apart in Overwatch.
Using the Tau Sept.
I was using the Tau Sept. The reason I like the Tau Sept, not only because of the 5+ Overwatch, but I also like the Vector Thrusters, which is the 6-inch move after.
Is that a Tau artifact relic, is it?
It's a Tau artifact, yeah.
I like Tau are good. I like Viola are quite cool, but they're like the ones I think that let you advance and fire rapid
without
fire
penalty.
Assault. Yeah.
Well, the Sisters were the Argent Shroud, who can essentially when they run, they just count as moving. So or your kind of assault weapons at no penalty. Retributors have a rule where they get no penalty if they move with heavy weapons. So in that order,
combos,
they can run and fire heavy weapons with no penalty. So we were quite far away, but I was able to just, cover the distance quickly.
I probably played way too defensive in that first turn. The reason I did is because I wanted to use the Canyon, where you reroll all the hits but you can't move, because I thought I might be able to do a lot of damage to you. The problem with that, though, was because there was so much line-of-sight breaking terrain, I struggled to draw a bead on a lot of your units.
Yeah, it gave me a turn to get some like foxholes in that scenery and then flush you out with... Basically, Celestine went in to do the knife to the heart.
Celestine. Well, she is a pain in the backside. She must have soaked up. So it was a bit like you shooting my Swarm Lord, me shooting at Celestine, because she was passing them off, she was shrugging off wounds. And then when I eventually did kill her, and the party poppers came out and there were celebrations, much fun was to be had. She comes back using the miracle dice. She doesn't even have to roll. Just like, yeah, I'll use that too. She's back. I didn't kill her a second time because I hardly had anything left. But it was a really good battle. And I really enjoyed it. And it was really good seeing the Sisters in action.
Yeah, it'd be good to have a kind of a rematch now you've had a practice with them. I'll have a few new units on Saturday. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Good to try them out.
Yeah.
But, it was really fun.
Yeah. And it's always good to play 4K because I don't play enough of it, really. Matt, what have you been doing in the hobby?
Well, as well as the battle, in order to get the scenery ready for the battle, I wanted to finish my Zone Mortalis stuff. I say finish. I've done 8 tiles worth, plus almost 2 boxes of scenery. I've got 8 walls left to paint from the second box, and then I've just got 4 more tiles and another box of Dark Uprising, and then I should have enough for a pretty big setup of Zone Mortalis scenery.
Now we've had a game sort of on it. Yeah, can't wait to have a full game on that.
It'd be good to have some like Necromunda games, proper Zone Mortalis games, but it worked as part of the 40k game as well, having an area of the board representing a warehouse or something they had to fight through.
Yeah.
You have to house rule a few things, like the walls don't really work unless they block line of sight incompletely.
Yeah, I think that was the only tripping point, wasn't it? Is, do we class it as you just can't shoot over the top? So I had some pathfinders up on a gantry. They could see over the walls, but we were kind of like, but would they be able to see over those walls, or would they be... Like,
I think as long as your house rule it all and clear across the game, that's fine. But yeah, it was really good. So we got that all painted. That's had some good feedback on Instagram and Twitter and stuff. So going to do a video tutorial on how to do that in the coming weeks, hopefully. Mm-hmm. It should be good. And then there's a bit of a palette cleanser because I've pretty much spent the entirety of January nailing this scenery. I saw Army Lord of Change. He had a bit of an aborted contrast scheme back in June last year. And he sat there on my painting desk, looking a bit lonely.
It's funny, you look through some of your painting progress images on Instagram and Twitter from before Christmas, and there's one constant on your painting desk, and that was your Exalted Lord of Change.
Well, then I was reading through the Disciples as each book and thought, you know what, I need to get this fella painted up. So yeah, got the airbrush out. It's about 80% airbrush, and then kind of highlights and stuff done with a brush.
Yeah, he looks amazing.
He does look very cool.
I see Valdor Gold, the new airbrush gold, is a really nice colour. It probably would apply with a brush as well. I haven't tried. But it's probably good colour for custodies.
Yeah, it's a more realistic, washed out looking gold, isn't it? Like antique gold rather than the bright metallic-y gold from Out of the Pot Retributor Gold.
I'd say it was one of the more difficult ones to get the consistency right to spray it, but I think that's the thing with metallics and an airbrush, right, because they've got bigger particles. But yeah, it turned out all right. So yeah, looking forward to painting a bit more zinc to finish out my army.
Yes.
And then today, just before recording, I built an Ossiarch Bone Reaper. Just the one, and I can't remember which one this is. One of the characters, Soul Doodah. Yeah, dude. He's a cool dude, and yeah, that's my Age of Sigmar army for 2020 that I'm working on. It's not going to be a sprint to get them done. I think we're going to pace ourselves over the year for these projects, aren't we?
Yeah, well, we have to, because you've got a bit of a head start on me.
Yeah.
He is, Matt, a Mortar Sand Soul Reaper. I knew he had the word soul in it.
That's exactly what I said.
I thought he was a Soul Shaper, but yeah.
I think Soul Shaper's the other one. They've all got similar sounding
names. He has got a scythe like the Grim Reaper, I suppose.
But yeah, he's really cool. So again, I don't know what colour scheme, whether follow the kind of box art or do something a bit more oriental, maybe. Yeah. I'm thinking some pinks and stuff could be good. Some kind of a cherry blossom effect.
His rules are really good, aren't they? Sorry, I'm just admiring his war scroll. Yeah. Very cool.
So that's what I'll be working on this year. But I want to get the all the scenery done first, so because I think in February we're going to have a bit of a specialist games push, aren't we?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to get some Necromunda painted. Possibly some Blood Bowl as well.
Yeah.
That's definitely on my paint table in February.
Yeah. Excellent. That was quite an extensive hobby section. We shall take a pause, regain our composure, and then come back with the news. I'll tell you what you can't tell while you listen to this podcast is how much talking actually goes on between takes. This podcast would be a lot shorter to record
if we just
shut up and got on with it. We have to... Yeah, anyway. Matt, news. Do we have any?
We have news, yeah. We've got some quite a lot of pre-orders coming up on Saturday.
Yes.
So first of all, we've got the next chapter of The Psychic Awakening. Is this book 5, maybe? I want to say it is. Ritual of the Damned. It pits the Dark Angels and the Grey Knights against the forces of Tzeentch and the Thousand Sons in particular.
Mm.
With new gubbins and traits and relics and artifacts and all that kind of cool stuff. And quite a new few stratagems for those forces as well.
Yes, yeah. So they've been previewing both armies on Warhammer Community, and they've also been doing it on Facebook as well. Stuff like the Dark Angels, they're really pushing, if you go for a Ravenwing army, there's warlord traits and army traits where you ignore modifiers when you move, which makes sense because Ravenwing needs to be moving quickly and not being penalised for that. One that I saw, which was quite tasty, something you have clarified for the Thousand Sons as well, is you've got Bolt Discipline, obviously, for the Imperium. The forces of Tzeentch, the Thousand Sons, get Malicious Volleys, which is all but Bolt of Discipline in name. The only sort of difference is the firing model has to be a Terminator Biker or Hellbrute to get the always firing rapid fire. So obviously Hellbrute's
within half range.
If you get rapid fire, if you're within half the weapon's maximum range, if the firing model belongs to an infantry unit and every model from that unit remains stationary, or the firing model is a Terminator, Biker, or Hellbrute.
Yeah, it's essentially the same.
Exactly. They've just added the Hellbrute keyword. But they've revealed on Facebook today that for one command point, you can use a stratagem on a Rubric Marines or Scarab Occult Terminator unit from your army. Until the end of that phase, models in that unit can shoot twice with rapid-fire weapons if that unit did not move this turn.
That is an awful lot of shots.
Especially on those rapid-fire 2 occult Terminators. That's a crazy amount of shots.
I saw a really good one as well. I think for 1 CP at the start of the battle, you can deploy 2 units of Rubric Marines outside of 9 inches of the enemy.
There's one that lets you pop up 3 inches away.
Nice.
You can't charge.
Isn't that the Grey Knight one?
Sorry, I think you're right. Yeah. I think that is Grey Knights, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was wondering what unit in the Grey Knight army would benefit from popping 3 inches away from something and not being able to charge? The Purifiers, maybe?
Yeah, Flamers. I mean, even your because they've all got a Bolter Discipline as well. So even and they've all got Storm Bolters, so you could drop five Terminators in that are getting what 20 shots.
But with, you really wouldn't want to drop Terminators 3 inches away and not be able to charge.
Unless it's
them.
An objective held by infantry, yeah. Just thin out the infantry, then take the objective because you're within range of it.
Also, I don't know. You can still, even though you can't charge, you can still heroically intervene. So you might be able
if
to...
If you are charged.
Yeah, if you're within 3 inches at the start of the summit phase, you can heroically intervene. So you could drop your character 3 inches away from the enemy. And then if the enemy...
you'd have to be outside 3 inches.
Outside 3 inches, yeah. But then if the enemy charged your screen, your character can then pile in.
There's some shenanigans.
I mean, I suppose just as a threat on the table, you know, if you've got your whole army coming down a flank and then you pop a dread... I mean, I don't know if there's a keyword limitation, actually. But if there isn't, you could drop a dread knight 3 inches away from something. Okay, you can't charge, but I mean, that is a massive threat.
I think there is a restriction on the units, yeah, but I can't remember what it is.
Well, even Terminators, that's a pretty durable unit to try and shift out of your face, isn't it?
I have lots of success dropping custodians 3 inches away from the enemy using the teleport helmet. And the difference is you can still charge the custodians that scenario, I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, it's good, like you say, getting onto objectives. You got a backfield objective, you think safe, nope.
But I've heard...
And a unit of Terminators is probably resilient enough to survive a backfield, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I've been looking around on Facebook at people's comments and stuff, and I've not really seen any so much on their Dark Angels, but I think Grey Knight players are pretty pleased with the changes.
They get an equivalent of the different doctrines, don't they?
Yeah, the Tides.
They do, yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll have more news on that once we've had a look at the book properly. Alongside this, we've got Dark Angels Master Lazarus. It seems like we saw ages ago now, but he is up for pre-order on Saturday.
Amazing model.
Really cool model, and can also build a generic captain as well, which is cool. For the Adeptus Sororitas, we have got loads of new kits, as expected. Not all of them, so I think we've got another week at least of these.
But a fair chunk of them.
A fair chunk, yeah. The big ticket item this week is the Exorcist. 65 euros, not sure what that translates to in other parts of the world. Nah, something like that. This looks really cool. Obviously, we've got the new variant weapon it can take. Really nice model.
I think it's the most detailed plastic vehicle for 40k.
Yeah, I'd say so, definitely. In the old Mark I Rhino chassis as well, which is nice to see. We've got the Penitent engines coming out, €45 for two of them, which is what, 30 quid, something like that? Mm-hmm. I'll be buying a load of these because they're amazing, specifically as mortifiers.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the Penitent engines didn't really hit the battle lines of the Tau.
Nope.
Because Dave was like, nah, they're not charging.
Well, it was twofold. I had a feeling they were going to be absolutely brutal in combat. And also, I had a... Because my Riptide had an ion cannon. And to be honest, there wasn't a lot in your list that was worth ion cannoning.
No.
So some massive wailing blades of doom coming from some walkers... Well, they were just crying out to be iron cannoned, weren't they?
I was thinking, my final list, I'm going to have 4 mortifiers and 2 penitent engines to put multiple threats on the table. So, yeah. These build 2, and you can build 1 as the kind of the character option for the squad.
The sarcophagus.
Yeah, which looks really cool. We have got the Arco Flagulants at €40. These guys are cool as well. They did well in the battle. All this kind of like fanatical stuff with the wound shrug. Just means it can
Which, to be honest, you only remembered halfway through the game.
Yeah.
What's this, 6+ or 5+?
5+.
5+ on them, yep.
5+.
And yeah, these guys that do like D3 attacks each, but there's a stratagem that lets them do 3 attacks each.
And was there a stratagem to let them fight again?
And a stratagem to let them fight after they charge. There's all sorts of shenanigans.
Fight after they die.
Yeah, so they're really cool. We've got Junith Arusha for €35. She is the sister on the like flying pulpit with flamers.
What I think this is probably... maybe my favourite unit.
Now, I'm going... I'm not going the Armarted Lady, so I won't be picking this up, but it is a nice kit. And then we've got the Hospitaller, the medic. And this is really cool, with kind of doves flying around her. And she is €30.
I like this model. I also like the original Hospitaller model as well.
Cool. She had the blades on her.
Yeah, she just was a more slightly slimmer version of her sister of battle.
Yeah.
She was one of the newer sister of battle squads, actually. So.
So yeah, they're all really, really nice kits. I think we've probably got another week's worth after this, but it's been worth the wait.
Definitely. Do you know the character on the like floating pulpit thing?
Yeah.
Don't you think that would make a really cool Battlefleet Gothic? You know, the front of it, it's like the Battlefleet Gothic.
Maybe,
crap.
Yeah.
Just put like a big...
That sounds like a conversion.
You could put that on one of your ironclads.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could. From Forge World, we've had the Legion
Aquator Bombard with Spicular Rockets. So this is what looks like based on the chassis of whatever the Plague Burst was originally built out of. There is a big Siege Mortar version coming. This is the million of rockets on the back of it version. Really nice tank in the Imperial Fist scheme. Looks a bit like some kind of like JCB hybrid.
Yeah.
But looks really nice. Tank, I like it.
Is it firing like Phosphex missiles? They look like canisters or something, don't they? Yeah, it's really cool, yeah.
I think it's a really nice tank.
I mean, all the vehicles they do for the 30k series are so cool. I just wish they made the game more accessible, like with 8th edition rules or...
I reckon we'll see some kind of...
I hope so, because
at some point.
There's so much cool stuff. I mean, those Dark Angel Terminators.
Yeah.
They're nice.
They're superb.
Yeah. Love Dark Angels.
And then final bit of news, we've got the big Beast Grave Grand Clash this weekend, and they've announced what prizes are up for this season. Similar to previous years, we've got alternate art cards, depending on where you place. They've got some nice Perspex wound tokens and a nice shiny trophy. We were lucky enough to enter an event with not many players and managed to snag some goodies, didn't we, Dave?
Yeah, you got more than me, because I came bottom or towards the bottom anyway. But I literally bought the Eyes of the Nine box like a few days before, threw together a deck and got battered. But it was fun. I mean, it was our first and only... Underworlds tournament.
Yeah, I'd like to go to another one because it was a good event.
I like the Underworld game, it's good, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in such things, Warhammer Live are streaming the whole event this weekend.
Brilliant.
And that is the news for this week.
That is the news. Thank you very much for that, Matt. We've got our top three behemoths coming later on in the podcast, but coming up next, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the Disciples of Tzeentch. So, in front of you, Matt, you have picked up the brand new battle tome for the Disciples of Tzeentch.
Yes, indeedy. It looks pretty tasty.
It does. Well, you've always been a big fan of big bird-like creatures and lots of magic.
I have. I mean, back in Warhammer 8th edition, I played Chaos Demons, who at the time, it was a mixed force of demons of all flavours, similar to how you can run them in 40k. Now, obviously, in Sigmar, they've kind of distilled them into the four different gods, so... Mm-hmm. I suppose quite lucky that when I went into Age of Sigmar, I had four armies, essentially, good
four
to go.
Armies, yeah.
And the Tzeentch book came out. It was one of the, after the Sylvaneth book, one of the first ones with lots of different options and spells and abilities.
Yeah.
And just as the game's gone into second edition, it had been left behind a little bit compared to some of the books that we get now.
I didn't realise it was so old, yeah.
Yeah, it came out, I think it was a similar time to the first Caradron book as well. Not to say it was a bad book. If anything, some of the units were a bit overpowered and there's a bit... of shenanigans going on.
Would you say it was one of the hardest hit with FAQs, the Disciples of Tzeentch books? Yeah,
it was. I mean, there were some really good characters. The Changeling, who you couldn't target and was a
nightmare. You used them against... Was it against myself?
Yeah. We had the original Change Host where you had two units, you swapped a model from each unit, and then you deployed the rest of the unit around those models to do some movement shenanigans. And stuff like that has been changed in the new book. I think they've basically brought it up to date in line with the newer Age of Sigmar edition, while still keeping it competitive. But then some fun for how you build your list, because something that we have seen with recent books is a lot of options to open up battle lines so you can build the army that you want, which was a criticism of some of the older books where you were kind of, I suppose, there was a lot of cookie-cutter lists that you had to take.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, the first part of the book is a lot of lore that if you've got the original book, a lot of it is the same. There are some references to other events that have gone on that have fleshed it out.
I guess, has he got anything about the A for Gold War? Because that's the new narrative between the Caladrons
in the book.
Yeah,
the
and a lot of that is in the box set as well. Right. So, but you know, it's good to have all the lore and there's information about different builds of Tzeentch armies that we'll see as we go into the book itself. But as ever, the lore, the artwork, it's all really, really nice.
It seems like quite a big book as well, actually.
Yes. And you can't knock Games Workshop for the presentation in these books. I mean, there's an awesome spread here of the Caradrons fighting Tzeentch with some weird Cthulhu-esque tentacles and stuff coming out of the earth. I believe they had this on show at the Open Day as well, this display.
Yeah, I think they did, yeah.
And yeah, all the normal miniature showcase. Now, we've not got many new models, unfortunately.
Looks like Dave's battle plan there. There's like a picture of a Zeech book with scribbles all over it.
Just as planned.
Yeah.
So yeah, really, we've only got the one new model out of the box and the three endless spells, which are really cool.
The thing is, though, the Zeech plastic range is actually very nice anyway, isn't it? They didn't need much attention in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a handful of characters. Like, the Blue Scribes are still resin. I think a few of the named characters are still resin. But pretty much everything else is plastic. And they're really nice plastic kits.
Yeah.
They've had quite a lot. I think the advantage of the Chaos Armies is that they've been dual systems, so they've had a lot of love across the years.
Are the cult, the Warcry cultists in the book?
No, they are not.
Okay.
They are just in the Slaves of Darkness one.
Okay.
The painting guides in the book is something that we've seen in a lot of the newer ones, and again, we've got lots of contrast in here as well, which is really cool.
It's a nice mix, isn't it? They mix them up.
They're probably a good army suited to contrast, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of organic shapes, lots of weird gribbly bits.
Crevices for the contrast to sink into.
And they're pretty quick to paint, really. If you pick up deep, you know, pink horrors, you can whack some pink contrast on them, give them a dry brush with the, I can't remember what it's called, the pink dry brush paint, and you're pretty much good to go. So, but on to the bit that we all want to know about, the rules themselves. So, Zeech have been reworked a little bit. I mean, it is change after all.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they've got a few new abilities. So, Destiny Dice are the same. They haven't changed. You get 9 of them at the start. And outside of some exceptions, you don't really generate some during the game. So you've got those to spend. Now, there's some builds where you can generate more, and there's some ways of changing the dice that you've got. But for most armies, you've got a limited pool of 9 dice. You know what they are? You can use them for casting, unbinding, dispelling, run, charge, hit, wound, and save rolls, and battle shock tests, and any roll that determines the damage of a random weapon. Which is good, because I think that was omitted last time. So you can guarantee those 6 damage spikes, which is really, really good. It specifies if you want to do a roll with multiple dice, so a charge, you'd have to spend 2 Destiny Dice to change both dice, or you could put one down and roll the other one. Essentially, you've got to do this before you roll the dice, so that's the main gimmick.
Yeah.
It is essentially exactly the same as the Sisters of Battle
miracle,
ability.
Miracle
and
dice.
You saw how effective those Miracle Dice are. Being able
to,
they're
very good.
I can guarantee
In fact, even though you were quite hindered by the fact you kept rolling low, you were still finding uses for those dice, like bringing Celestine back in the 2+.
So the Sisters of Battle using Chaos Troop, this seems a bit...
It's definitely not Chaos, it is Faith in the Emperor.
Okay.
I mean, you could argue that Celestine's technically a demon prince of the Emperor, but that's, you know, we're having the Inquisition round in a minute.
We'll just slightly ignore that, won't we?
So yeah, also interestingly, if you use a Destiny dice, that roll counts as being unmodified. So any abilities that trigger off unmodified rolls, you can activate with the Destiny Dice. That is a game changer.
Remember this, because there is a certain person in the Mortal Realms that this very much helps.
Yeah, wow, yeah, exactly. The locus of change, so each hero, demon hero, had a locus in the old rules. That's been folded into a universal rule. If a Zeench demon model is wholly within 12 inches of a Zeench demon hero, they are -1 to hit in melee, which is really good. The old Zeench ability was essentially rerolling ones for saves, traditionally. This makes them a lot more survivable.
You say is that a model wholly within or a unit wholly
within? Units that are wholly within 12
units
of a Zeench hero,
right. Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, all the heroes get it baked in, and all your units, as long as you stay near your heroes.
Yep.
-1 to hit in melee is pretty good. Doesn't affect shooting, but there are ways around that as well. There's always ways around in Zeench. And the final bit, when you build your army, you can choose one of 6 change covens who have different rules and abilities. And we'll go to those in a bit. Some of them are very, very good. They obviously lock you into an artifact and a command trait. But I think they're probably worth it.
Yeah.
Like we've seen in the Khorne one, I didn't tend to pick them. In Slaanesh, you had to pick one of the 3 builds. This one, I think a lot of people will pick one of these covens, but you've got the option of not if you don't want to.
They're a bit hit and miss, aren't they?
They are,
yeah. I find the ones in the Ogre book aren't... There's one or two that are pretty good, like for Beastclaw and stuff, but you could quite easily just build one, use it, because there's quite a few cool stuff outside of those.
There's some that people will gravitate into in these, and we'll cover those in a bit, because I think stuff that improves rend... Stuff that makes you not be able to run away in combat. Yeah, there's some nasty stuff. Summoning hasn't changed. You still get a summoning point for each spell that is cast and not unbound, friend or foe. you have got an awful lot of casters in this. I mean, I knocked together a quick list earlier, and I've probably got 10 casts in a turn before you factor in any endless spells that can increase that, like the Cogs or the Balewind Vortex, plus your opponent's casts. You can quickly summon some stuff.
Gonna now, need more Rune Lords.
Well, yeah, it starts off, you know, 10 points for 3 Screamers, 10 Brimstones or 10 Blue Horrors. Not great. As you go up, though, 30 points for a Lord of Change. I think you could probably get 2 Lords of Change in some games if you've got lots of casters.
Is it?
Definitely one Lord of Change.
1 point per spell cast.
1 point per spell cast and not unbound.
And not unbound. Okay, right.
So if you can get your 10 spells off over the course of the game, that's 50 summoning points. That could get you a Lord of Change and 10 Pink Horrors.
And I think the summoning points have, on some of that stuff, has got cheaper. The Lord of Change definitely has got cheaper to summon.
Yeah.
I think you say the Pink Horrors has gone up, though.
But yeah, that's because of their rules. Pink Horrors are quite... I mean, there's been some controversy on that, but I think Pink Horrors are good myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you've got a pool there to summon as you wish. It's unlike Khorne, you keep any leftover points as well. So if you want to spend a few points to summon a unit, maybe a hero as another summoning point, because you know your current hero is going to die... yeah, it's quite tricksy. You have to put them within 12 inches of each hero, though. So if you can take out all the heroes, they can't summon anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be 9 inches outside of the enemy, so you can
control
a bit where they go down. It's not like some armies where there's a focal point where they can summon two. It is all on the heroes, which is cool. What's really new, and I don't know if Jay's seen this bit yet, is the agendas. So there's a number of agendas that in your hero phase you can declare that you're going to achieve it by the next hero phase. If you do so, you get a bonus. It's a nice little quest that you're going to do. So, for example, Mass Conjuration. Pick one friendly Zinch wizard. If that wizard successfully casts 2 spells and or endless spells in that hero phase with an unmodified casting roll of 9+, and neither spell is unbound, the agenda is completed. They add 1 to casting rolls for the rest of the game.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Now, bearing in mind that Lords of Change roll 2 dice and change the lowest to match the highest, or Destiny dice can be used as an unmodified roll, that's a pretty easy one to get a +1 to cast on your wizard.
Mm-hmm. And can you do that again in the following turn to get a +2?
So you can do each agenda once.
Okay. Per model or per...
Per army.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And you have to declare that you're doing it in the hero phase, and you can only do 1 per hero phase. And there's 5, so essentially you can try and do
that's
one
cool.
hero phase.
That gives you a sort of like something else to be working on yourself.
Yeah, I hope we see it in other books. It's like little objectives to unlock another ability.
It's interesting that, yeah. Almost has like an RPG element to your battle. Cool.
Well, I think we will see more kind of little things like this, because obviously it's hard to say because I haven't got the books. We'll talk about it next week. But Caradrons get... each unit in a Caradron army gets Aether Gold now, don't they? Which you can spend for rerolls and stuff.
Yeah, right, yeah, cool.
As you progress through the game.
Oh, I like that.
Like another example here. You pick an enemy unit that has 9 or more models. If you destroy that unit, the unit that destroyed it gets +1 to hit for the rest of the game. They're pretty good. They're not massive increases, but they're pretty good.
And do they cost anything to declare? What happens with downside? Could you just declare every turn?
No, if you don't do it, you've lost it.
Ah, you get 1 attempt
to. So you've got to try and do it by your next. Okay. And depending on the double turn, it might buy you actually another player turn to do it in as
well.
Which is pretty cool. Tides of Anarchy is a good one. So you pick a Zinch unit that's got 9 or more models, pick an objective that's controlled by your opponent. If you take that objective for the rest of the game, each of those models counts as 2 models for the purposes of objectives.
Ah, yeah, useful.
So it kind of encourages you to do these different feats, which is pretty cool.
That's very cool if you're going second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like these. It adds a different dynamic to the game, makes it a bit more interactive in your opponent's phase as well, because you think, oh, well, which ones are these going to get if I'm getting double turned? Yeah, it's pretty cool. We then get some command traits. These are split as they were between the mortal stuff and the demonic stuff, with a little side bit of the Arcanite. So stuff like the Gaunt Summoner's got the Arcanite keyword, so you've got a bit of crossover there. So if you mix your different characters, you can have a combination of different relics and spells and command traits. Like I say, a lot of these are dependent on your build, so you're probably going to need some battalions to get the most out of these. Some that we'll mention, though, that I think are worth highlighting, because they're really, really good. The sentient weapon, the demon weapon. So only Zinch demons heroes can have them, which is a lot of the book, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
If the unmodified hit roll for an attack made with this melee weapon is a 6, and the target bears an artifact of power, the target no longer bears that artifact of power.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
Fury Amulets, goodbye.
Well, you could take your host, give your compulsory one to your Lord of Change, that's probably leading it. Take a little throwaway Herald of Tzeentch, that's, you know, he's not expensive. Give him that, throw him into combat. There's lots of minuses to hit that you can stack, so he might even survive it. But for the cost of that hero, you can nullify that ethereal amulet.
Just use one of your destiny dice to get
Yeah, and you've got the guarantee. So you've only got one attack, but you've got that six on your board already.
Yeah.
And then you everything else can shoot to the heart's content and rend away.
That, to me, is the standout weapon in the book. I think that's going to be really, really useful for some of those really nasty artifacts.
Yeah.
And gets around things like the ethereal amulet, where you really can't do anything against it apart from mortal wound him off the table. I mean, to be fair, mortal wounding things off the table as Tzeentch can do in bucket loads. But yeah, gives you... Now that Maw Crusher, it'd think twice about going into this big pack of Tzeentch demons.
Especially if I can see a six in your destiny dice pile.
Yeah.
I mean, the only way is if you can kill it first, but like say if you've got the minus ones to hit.
Yeah. So yeah, really cool. We've got some cool spells with, again, there's some overlap between the two of them. Some of the spells are in both lists, and it specifies that if you take it as a Law of Change and a Law of Fate, you can still even cast it once.
Yeah.
So they have clarified that, which is good. However, there are some spells with similar abilities that have got different spell names. So if you do take a Mortal Caster and a Demon Caster, you can get them both off. Which we'll come to in a bit when I talk about some of the shenanigans you can do with the book. But you're going to have lots of casters. It's good that we've got multiple tables to give them all these spells. Obviously, we've got all the realm spells as well. But yeah, you're going to be casting a lot of spells, which is really cool. The really, really cool bit in this book, though, is the different hosts. So we've got the Eternal Conflagration. This is your shooty magical flame build. And essentially, it gives all your warp flame, billowing warp flame, and magical flame. So that's essentially the shots from the flamers, from the heralds, and from the horrors. Improve their end by one.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty good, considering pink horrors have got 3 shots each. So 20 of them have got 60 shots at minus one rend that you can get up to hitting on twos.
That's very good.
So it gives them a bit more punch. The command ability, if the unmodified hit roll of an attack is a 6, subtract 2 from the bravery. So you hit, as well as hitting them with this massive rend, you can drop the bravery down as well.
And then lose more in battle shot. Or force the opponent to spend a command point.
There is a minus 12 inch aura, minus 1 to hit with missile weapons. Okay. So that stacks with your minus 1 to hit for melee. So you've got a base minus 1 to hit for anything. And then the artifact, you'd probably put on your Lord of Change or something. Whenever you allocate a wound or mortal wound to the bearer, on a 3+, the attacking unit suffers 1 mortal wound. So very much like the acid blood on the magma droth. Mm-hmm. A massive incentive to not fight your big Lord of Change,
mm-hmm.
who really doesn't want to be in combat. He can fight all right, but if you've got the danger of doing mortal wounds to yourself on a 3+, you've got to think twice about charging into him.
Yeah. Which Unless you're an Auric, then just do it.
Unless you're an Auric, yeah. We've got the host's duplicitous. Any units within 3 inches of a host duplicitous unit cannot retreat. You send in your big packs of pink horrors. They are stuck in combat for the rest of the game. Wow. Unless they kill them. And if they kill them, then you've got a load of blue horrors. And if you kill them, you've got a load of brimstone horrors. These look really, really nasty. Their command ability, when a horror unit is finally destroyed, once per game, on a 5+, an identical unit is deployed. So you fight your way through all these horrors and then they come back again on a 5+. Don't think you can do a destiny dice to change that though, because it isn't one of those specified roles, but it's still pretty good.
That's really good, yeah.
The command trait, you can re-roll all casting and unbinding within 9 inches. Not only are you pinned in combat, you're getting the spells off guaranteed, and then summoning more stuff in. The summon stuff also has this keyword because it's part of this army and then sticks you in combat. Yeah, and then the artifact is +1 to save rolls. Not the best, but it's not the worst artifact in the world.
No.
They seem pretty good for being really annoying. I think a lot of people will go for the extra rend flamey abilities. We've got the host's arcanum. So this is an interesting one. Once per turn in the first, third and fifth battle round, when you attempt to unbind a spell, it's automatically unbound. So these are your anti-magic kind of guild. It's a bit weird that it's the first, third, and fifth battle round.
Mm.
And I don't really think you need auto-unbinding in this army because you've got so many ways to get those unbinds up.
Destiny dice, changing the dice to the highest value.
It's almost a bit a counter build to Zeech.
Yeah, it is.
There's a command trait where D3 units that can fly can move 6 inches, so all your screamers and stuff can move up.
That's good.
There's a command ability where you can increase the rend and save rolls for them. And then the Fang Circlet, once per battle, you can add 6 screamers of Zeech to your army. So I guess the idea is shut down spells, millions of screamers flying, and they can move like 16 inches, so they're the quick army.
Yeah.
So that's all right.
That could tempt a tournament player, that, you know, if they're imagining people turn up with Zeech with lots of casting, and then you turn up with Zeech army that's great at unbinding.
Or Hallowheart.
Yes.
Or Nagash.
Yeah.
You know, just shut down those big. It's Teclis potentially when he comes up, being able to shut that down.
Teclis will have a rule that shuts down that ability.
Probably.
I've seen that, I know. I've emailed them in to tell them.
We've got the Cult of the Transient Force. They were our kind of demon-based ones. Now we get onto the more kind of mortal-based ones. The Cult of the Transient Form, I think, would appeal to Dave. So each time a Karrick Acolyte dies, roll a dice. On a 2-5, it can fight before it's removed. On a 6, you remove the model and add a Zangor to the unit.
Huh.
Basically turn into Zangors as
they're
dying.
That's cool. Do you know what I think? I think the Acolytes are really nice models, and I think they've been, I mean, you'll come to it in a minute, but I think they've been buffed in this book, and I think they're well worth taking because they're quite cheap, especially in that, what they call, covens, and with their War Scroll changes. I think they're a good little unit.
Yeah, well, for one command point, you can pick a unit, and then on a 5+, they change into Zangors when they die. So that's kind of better than a Shrug Wound, because you've got another model back.
Yeah.
Shrug it, and it comes back.
To a better, more fighting model.
As an angry
model.
Bird.
Yeah. So they're pretty cool. There's a +2 Bravery Aura, and the artifact's a bit pants. It's +1 Wounds. Nah. Not the greatest one. I quite like the Zangors coming back there. That's quite fun. We've got the Pyrophane Cult. Whenever they take so you Karrick Acolytes have got a ranged attack at the end of a phase, you roll a dice for each unit affected by that on a 5+ D3 mortal wound, so a little bit of extra damage after your attacks. If you're going Acolyte heavy and you're shooting stuff,
you could be dealing a lot of D3 mortal wounds.
I think I'd rather turn them into Zangors though.
Yeah, I'd rather turn them into Zangors.
And then the final one is the Guild of Summoners. Now this one could work quite well with the demon stuff. Essentially your summoning chart turns to just Lords of Change. But your first one costs 9 fate points.
Okay.
So in the army list that I wrote before this, you can summon a Lord of Change turn one.
Yeah.
The second time you try and cast one, it goes up to 18, and then the third time it goes up to 30. But with some builds, I reckon you could get 4 or 5 Lords of Change on the table.
I really like this coven, but I think I would miss... I mean, I've never played Zeech, but I think I would miss summoning other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's a command point that gives you +1 to cast. Again, arguably, you don't need it with all those Lords of Change kicking around. The command trait on a 4+, your hero phase, you get an extra command point. Yeah, that's pretty good. And the artifact is don't take Battle Shark. Yeah.
You're mainly going to have a lot of Lords of Changes, so you're not really going to need Battle Shark.
It's a strange one. You could build around going super Behemoth heavy and just take Lords of Changes, minimum squads of Karrick Acolytes because they've got a spell, so you can get your spell count up.
If you love painting Lords of Changes, that's definitely the list for you. Yeah.
You could probably, if you're lucky, you get, I don't know, 8 Lords of Change, including the 4 that you start with. I mean, you're going to struggle to get that in points, but yeah, seems pretty cool. I think it's all about the extra rend on your range attacks, though. So, some of the war scrolls have changed quite a lot. The biggie being the Battalion for Change Host. So, as we mentioned earlier, back in the day, you pick 2 units. You essentially swap the model and redeploy the unit. That has been reworked. Instead, you pick 2 units on the battlefield, as long as the Lord of Change is alive, and that's kind of like the leader of the battalion. You can redeploy those units anywhere on the battlefield, 9 inches away from the enemy. So you just turn one, right there, moving right up there, in your face, deal with it.
That's really
cool. You can do
cool.
it in every one of your hero phases. Dancing around the battlefield.
For a command point, or just do it?
Just do it.
That tree counteracts, because when I've played around with Zeech lists, they're quite small. So this gets around that by being able to redeploy on objectives.
You've got a lot of objective control.
Yeah.
Especially with these big units of horrors and stuff, they don't move.
Stuff like shifting objectives, perfect.
Your flamers and stuff have got relatively short range, so you just move them into range and shoot them a million times.
Mm.
It's quite expensive. I think it's about 200 points.
Ooh.
Change host is 180 points, so it's quite expensive. I think it's a must-take myself. You have to take a Lord of Change, and then eight of Horror Heroes, Exalted Flamers, Horrors, Flamers, Screamers, Burning Chariots. So you have to have nine units exactly, and you've got a one-drop army that can redeploy every turn.
That's interesting, because they sort of went off one-drop armies, and now they've come back round to one-drop armies. There isn't any other one-drop army, is there? I mean, in the game.
Well,
Sylvaneth used to be able to do one-drop.
Seems you've got a lot of this. A lot of these are. So a unit of Exalted Flamers, then 3-8 units. A Change Caster and 8 units of Horrors. A lot of this you can do. I mean, Slaanesh, you've got similar. You can do it. A couple of drop armies.
Couple of drop armies, definitely. But the one drop, I remember I used to be able to do a one drop Sylvaneth army, but that was a long time ago.
I used to be able to do a one drop Iron Jaws army until the new book.
You can't take any of the mortal stuff. So make me sneaky shenanigans that we'll come to in a bit. I actually take the Gaunt Summoner, who doesn't fit inside this, so you take this,
two drop.
Plus the Gaunt Summoner, you've got a 2-drop army. It's still probably going to out-deploy most people in the current meta. I think it's really good for 180 points, that ability to move around, like you say, counteracts, you know, the fact that you've got a relatively small army. Let's face it, your Pink Horror battle lines are 200 points.
Yeah. I don't know what that battalion is, but I was drawn by the name of it. So is that Overseer's Fate Twisters?
Yeah.
That's a cool name for a battalion.
So this is a Lord of Change and a load of Heroes or Flamers or Burning Chariots. You get a Destiny Dice every hero phase.
Oh.
And if your Lord of Change is alive, you can re-roll a Destiny Dice.
Ooh.
So that is your Destiny Dice generation.
That's tasty.
And again, that's pretty easy to take. You probably can do a one-drop army because you'd need some units in there.
Battle lines.
But you take your Lord of Change, all your heroes, your Exalted Flamers that you're going to take anyway because of the race, and then just fill in your battle line. So you've probably got a 4-drop army there that generates Destiny Dice every turn.
Yeah.
Pretty good shout.
Good.
Likewise, we get some for the Mortals. Now, I haven't really got any of the Mortal models, haven't looked into these too much. But again, there's lots and lots of options around, you know, do you want lots of Skyfires? Do you want lots of Zangors? Seems pretty cool.
Hmm.
There's lots of abilities in here that let those units shoot in the hero phase as well.
So
your Skyfires get to shoot in the hero phase.
They still do mortal wounds when they shoot.
So they on an unmodified 6 to hit, they just do like D3
mortal
wounds.
Yeah.
Which is cool. So onto the War Scrolls, there's not some massive changes for the big birds. Kairos is pretty cool. Again, once per battle, he can, after rolling a dice, change it to any result he likes. Pretty powerful. Does list some specified roles that you can change, so you can't do priority roles anymore. I think in the original one you could do that. He's got an interesting spell. He picks a unit within 18 inches. It goes off on an 8, bearing in mind that his lowest dice roll changes to his highest dice roll, and he can amend a dice if he wants to, and he's got his destiny dice. If it goes off, does 6 mortal wounds, and if it kills anything, a chaos spawn summons. So you could just take out a character with that.
Yep.
As he gets wounded, that degrades. But, I mean, 4 to 6 wounds, it's D6. You could just use Destiny Dice to make that 6 wounds.
Mm.
I think that's pretty good. The Chaos Spawn that summons can go within 3 inches of the slain model, the model's unit. So on a Horde, for Zap, there's a Chaos Spawn. Deal
for
with
Zap.
That. Seems pretty good.
I like the idea of spawning lots of Chaos Spawns.
There's quite a few ways of spawning Chaos Spawns as well. Gaunt Summoner has the same profile out of the Slaves to Darkness book, so he can get his awesome Furies. He's quite expensive at 240 points, I think he is.
Wow.
But essentially, you can get a free 200-point unit Pink Horrors out of him, so it's worth it. As before, it costs him a cast to summon it, but it doesn't count as a cast for purposes of your Fate Dice.
Right.
Next kind of big change is the Changeling.
The Changeling has changed.
He's had quite a big rework, so he was really, really annoying. He couldn't be targeted. He was an absolute nightmare when you were playing against him.
Yep.
That's been completely reworked. So in the hero phase, you can pick an enemy unit within 9 inches. If you do so, you subtract 1 to hit from them and half their movement. Archdeceiver, at the start of the first battle round, after the armies have set up, you can remove the model from the battlefield, and then at the end of your first movement phase, you place him again more than 3 inches away from enemy territory. Enemy models in enemy territory. So if you're going second, he's off the board, he can't be targeted, and then in your turn, pops down, 3 inches away. Then he can do his sneaky, right, you're minus one to hit and half movement, which is pretty cool. And he casts two spells. So yeah, he's pretty cool. He's not as cool as he used to be, but he's definitely got uses.
Yeah, I think he's the... Yeah, he's a bit disappointing. But I mean, still minus one to hit, still quite powerful.
So yeah, and then really the other kind of units that I've got... Oh, blue scribes are worth a shout. These are really, really cool, and I'm going to have to pick some up. And I've been tempted to get the models for a long time. Each time a wizard within 18 inches of the model casts a spell on a 4+, the blue scribes learn that spell for the rest of the battle. Including your own one. So if you've got some redundancy there in your spells, if Nagash is Hand of Dusting people, he can learn that as well.
Ironically, you'll need a little book next to you so you can scribe down the spells that you're learning throughout the game.
Is that, ironically then, aren't the blue scribes better at casting Hands of Dust than Nagash?
Well, it's funny you should say that. Instead of casting a spell normally, in each of your hero phase, you can read. They can just read from the book. If you do so, you get a dice. You pick a spell, you roll a dice. On a 2+, that spell is cast automatically and cannot be unbound.
Irresistible force. Of
That's bonkers. It's
can amazing. You ally in blue scribes with like LREL or something?
So, that's amazing.
Yeah. Now it specifies any spell that they can cast. So like. The Kairos' one where he does 6 mortal wounds, that's tied into his profile.
Yeah.
So they haven't got that
ability. But there's not many of those.
There's not, no.
That's ace.
2+, cast a spell, can't be unbound, is really strong.
You just hug into your big casters, don't you?
And I think they're 120 points, they can move 16 inches.
That ace. Yeah,
I think
in
most of the inch lists, you're going to be very caster heavy to get
the most. You definitely need one of those in your list.
So yeah, they're ace. And then all the flamey stuff's been made a lot better. So, flamers as inch, you've got an 18-inch range, 3 attacks, hit on a 4, wound on a 3, d3 damage. No rend, but take them in the flamey host, they've got minus 1 rend. If they're shooting something that's got 10 or more models, it's plus 1 to hit.
Yep.
If they're shooting something that's got 20 or more models, it's plus 2 to hit.
Yeah.
If they're nearby an exalted flamer, it's another plus 1 to hit. So really, you've got a unit of 3, it's got 10 shots, it's shooting a unit of, say, 20... Oryx, they'd be hitting on 2s, wounding on 3s, minus 1 rend in that change cult, and D3 damage each. That's brilliant. Up to 30 damage.
Yeah, that's
which is really,
really
good. And a lot of the other kind of flamer things have been tweaked in line with that. Horrors have been completely reworked. They're now 200 points for 10 pink horrors. They are battle line. If you take blues or brimstones, they are no longer battle line, but you get a discount, essentially. Whenever a pink horror is slain, it is replaced with 2 blue horrors. When a blue horror is slain, it is replaced with a base of brimstone horrors. All the pink horrors have to die first until you can start killing blue horrors.
Yeah, makes sense.
They're only a caster while there's 9 or more pink horrors, and they can only cast their own spell, which essentially gives them plus 1 to hit. But it's a 6+ cast, and you can cast it multiple times if you've got multiple units.
And
it counts towards your fate, yeah. So base, they're hitting on 5s. Not very impressive. Get the spell off, they're hitting on 4s. Okay. And then they've got a similar rule to the flamers, where if they're shooting at something with more models, essentially they get extra to hit, which is pretty cool.
The only downside to them, aside from their points, is that where you say they have to have more than 9 pink horrors to be able to cast. So as soon as you've lost... If you've got a unit of 10, which is 200 points, did you
200
say?
200 points, yeah.
You lose 1 pink horror, so you can't cast.
Though, if you use a 1 for your battle shock with a destiny dice, you get D3 models back.
Yeah, that's true.
There's also, we didn't mention earlier, one of the battalions. Every horror unit gets D3 models back at the start of the hero phase.
Do you get a discount for 20 horrors?
There are no discounts in this book. Neither were there in Slaves of Darkness. So I don't know if they're moving away from the big horde armies and going in towards more monsters and stuff. Perhaps. But yeah, there's no discounts. If anything, they're more expensive. They are bananas with shooting, though. You know, 3 attacks. 20 of them can put out 60 attacks. If they're shooting a unit with 21 models, you can probably get up to, like, 3+ to hit. And then again, in that flame host, they're minus 1 rend as well. So, pretty tasty. I think some people are disappointed by the changes in these. I still quite like them. And they can still be really annoying.
I think the change into blue and brimstone is... That's how they should have been all along.
Yeah.
Do they not get the option anymore to do mortal wounds instead of?
You can do. You can instead, but it's on like a 5+.
Right, it's not a guaranteed.
It's not guaranteed. Okay. So if you've got the model, you're better off placing.
Yeah,
models.
If you've run out of models.
Yeah.
In the tar pit cult. Oh, then yeah. Big units for 20 pitting horrors. Yeah, they're 400 points, but whatever you get them into combat with isn't moving for the rest of the game. Mm. Plus, you can shoot in combat as well. So all those.
And then
shots
bring them
the
back,
face.
Like you say in Battleshock.
Yeah. So horrors are pretty good, but expensive. I think a lot of people use flamers for Battleline now because that's the thing. And as for that, there's no other kind of massive changes that I've seen flicking through.
We've got the Magister, the new character.
The new Magister, yeah, he's alright. He's essentially a hero
on a disc,
yeah.
And he gets to turn people into a Chaos Spawn.
He does, yeah. It's a similar spell, so he does D3 more wounds. If any models are slain, you can set up a Chaos Spawn within 3 inches of the slain model's
unit.
So
they want one,
yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, there's definitely some spawn summoning shenanigans. I think the spawn profile's changed a little bit. It's now a Zeench Chaos Spawn. Same as usual, 2d6 attacks, hitting on fours, wounded on fours. If you roll a double for the number of attacks, it hits on threes and wounds on threes, which is pretty cool.
So that's different.
Yeah.
So you can have a mixture of spawns, not just a regular spawn now. You can have Chaos Spawn, Zeench Chaos Spawn.
Yeah.
There'll be Corn Chaos
Spawn. 20L Spawn.
And then we get three new endless spells. They're all right. I don't think they're amazing, but some of them are pretty good. In my list that I made, I don't really have any room for them. There's some cool stuff, though. So we've got the Burning Sigil of Zeench, which does a random ability to the closest unit.
Jake, guess what one of the random abilities is?
Turns you into a spawn.
Turns you into a spawn.
So, yeah, so the first one, you basically roll a d6 for the closest unit. So you need to
closest
gamble...
Enemy unit.
Closest unit.
Okay, yeah.
Now, a lot of them are beneficial abilities, so you probably want to put it on your own unit, but there's a chance that bad things happen.
Yeah.
So on a 1, you take d3 mortal wounds. If any models were slain, you get a Chaos Spawn. So, you know, you
any
lose...
Any models were slain?
Yep.
Oh, wow, so d3 mortal wounds on a unit of goblins.
And you get a Chaos Spawn. So which is like 50 points, so yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, that's good, that.
Two crippling appendages, you half the movement. Yeah. And then we get to the better one. So 3 to 4, it can move D6s even if it ran. So we get into position. On a 5, add 1 to the attacks. So horrors have got a million attacks already, give them even more attacks. And on a 6, -1 to hit. Which you're sensing a bit of a theme here.
Mm.
The Tome of Eyes is a weird one. Basically, it's got its own spell that you can only cast if you've summoned it. Pick an enemy unit within 18 inches on a 3 plus this of a D3 mortal wound. For each model slain, subtract 1 from bravery for the rest of the battle.
And I guess you would get a fate point for that as well.
You would get a fate point as well, yeah. But it's already cost you a cast to get this tome down.
But it's another caster if nobody dispels it.
You know, you've got... It sits with your model, and basically it's an extra spell that they know.
Yeah, so you're foregoing...
You don't get a free cast. So you summon your endless spell. Say if you've got two casts, you summon your endless spell for one spell, and then for your second spell you cast this one. So you're just getting a new spell, you're not getting an extra
cast.
Right,
okay.
What's kind of good and also not good is the ability Transfixed by Countless Eyes. If you cast a spell on a 2 or a 12, it automatically goes off at irresistible force... But you take D3 mortal wounds. Now, considering the Laws of Change can shift the dice anyway, it just doesn't seem worth it. There's so many pluses to cast.
Yeah.
You don't really need a resistible force, especially when you've got it on a squishy 6-wound Herald.
Maybe in a Mortal Zeench army, is it just demons that can do them swapping dice around?
Yeah, the Laws of Change predominantly have that. So, right. Yeah, it gives you a way of getting those Uber spells off. But you just take the Blue Scribes instead. You can do it on a 2+ for free.
Yeah.
So it just seems a bit of a weird one, that.
Yeah.
The spell's pretty good if you're doing, like, a bravery-hitting army, but, yeah.
Can you get that spell into a different army, though? Not a Zeench army with the allies. Is that one way
you're doing?
I'll
be able to
taking
take
a Zeench wizard in a Maybe. Slave's army or something
like
that.
There might be some shenanigans.
Maybe there's more use for that spell outside of a Zeench army.
Perhaps. And then we've got the Demonic Simulacrum, which is a big, snappy, fiery jaw thing. It's a mortal endless spell, predatory, flies around. It does lots of damage to wizards. You roll 9 dice for the closest unit within 6 inches. For each 5 plus a mortal wound, for each wizard, it's on a 4+. A predatory spell that does a load of damage to wizards seems like a double-edged sword in a Zeench army, because if that flies back towards your lines, you're going to lose a hero to that.
Yep.
But... It depends. If elves are super magic-y, then maybe you do take that risk and you throw this spell at them. it just seems that your low model cat army is a bit vulnerable.
There's a lot of wizards and stuff in the game.
Not in my living city army, Dave.
Not in my Caradon Overlord list, yeah.
So yeah, I think they're not the best endless spells. They're what uses, definitely. And if you want to gamble and you know you're fighting magic heavy, then yeah, go for the demonics and the Arcrim, but just make sure it doesn't hit your own guys, otherwise you've got a lot of dead models. Mm. So as to builds, we mentioned Archeon earlier. Archeon gets a massive benefit out of this due to the fact that his Slayer of Kings can be activated with Destiny Dice. If you really, really, really want to kill somebody and you've got two sixes on your Destiny Dice...
I mean, obviously you're going to have to be quite lucky to have two sixes in your Destiny Dice. But if that happens, then yeah, you've got an instant kill.
Yeah, you've guaranteed killing a model.
That would have helped you on the live stream. Oh no, it wouldn't have, would it? Because you'd be better off anyway.
The only problem with Archeon, because I toyed with Siege, because I really like the Archeon model, so I was like, well, can I build an Archeon list with Siege? Not really, because he's so expensive and Siege is so expensive.
There's kind of ways around it. So you've got a lot of battle line options. Horrors are battle line, but they're expensive. Karak Acolytes are 100 points.
Like that.
Not bad. Zangos are 180 points for 10, so they're expensive as well. You can take Burning Chariots of Tzeentch if you've got a Herald on a chariot, 150 points. Flamers are battle line in a conflagration army, which is what I think a lot of people will go for, because 120 points for all those shots is pretty good. If you take a Hos Arcanum army, which was the Screamer Heavy one, you can take Screamers as battle line for 80 points. So you could take Archeon in that. 3 units of Screamers and just fill up with the other stuff. Mm. Might not be the most ideal, but you get Archeon using the Slayer of Kings on these sixes, maybe. Mm-hmm. What I'll probably build around is the Conflagration, and you can get up to -4 to hit. I actually noticed while we're flicking through this, you can get it up to -5 to hit. So, you've got your base -1 melee demon aura. Everything's got the demon keyword, so awesome, we're sorted on that. The change host ability is -1 to ranged attacks from your guy. Pretty cool. You've got Arcane Suggestion, which is an Arcanite spell that you give to a Gaunt Summoner for -1 to hit. You've got Treason of Tzeentch. Basically, it does a load of mortal wounds. If it kills anyone, you -1 to hit. That's a demon spell, so you give it to one of your Lords of Change. The Changeling gives an additional -1 to hit. And if you get lucky with a Burning Sigil of Tzeentch, you've got an additional -1 to hit.
Lots of -1s to hit.
And you can move these units around the
battle. On one unit.
On one enemy unit. Yeah. Like some of them are enemy units, some of them are auras. But right. With your hopping units around the battlefield, you can... You've got a bit of control. I've got a unit of 20 horrors in there that you throw up. And you can try and fight them, but there's, you know, so many modifiers to hit them.
Yeah, and the problem there is that'll last until your next hero phase.
Yeah.
So potentially with double turns and whatnot, you're at -1 to hit with your elite choppy unit. It's a right pain, yeah. Well, not -1 to hit, -4 or -5 to hit.
Meanwhile, all your flamers are shooting away with rend and loads of damage. Yeah, I think Tzeentch are going to be a frustrating army to fight. Even if you get in combat, the shenanigans they can counter it with.
They sound very, very powerful, but the thing that I've probably mentioned a couple of times during this is you don't have many models. So it's they're very hard to hit. They're very good at casting spells, dealing out lots of mortal wounds, but... If you lose a unit, you've lost a big portion of your army.
Oh, yeah. Well, unless you're in the faction that on a 5+, your big unit comes back.
That's only on a 5+.
It is, yeah. You can't guarantee it. You can't use a Destiny dice for that either.
No.
So, yeah, I really like the book. I'm looking forward to playing some games with them. I think they're going to be quite a finesse army. It's all going to be about positioning. One of the advantages they've got, they're very good at positioning. I think they're probably second to Sylvaneth, maybe, at moving around shenanigans.
Yeah.
Sylvaneth have got a bit more control because the woods counter your enemy's movement as well.
Yeah.
Whereas Tzeentch don't really have that side. But yeah, it'll be good to see them on the battlefield, I think.
Mm. Yeah. Excellent. Well, let us know what you think of the Tzeentch book. Let us know via social media at Sprues and Brews, facebook.com/Sprues and Brews, or comment on the website. Matt's really looking forward to having a game with those, I'm sure, in a couple of weeks during one of our hobby updates. You'll be able to fill us in on how they get on.
Yeah,
maybe we could fight some Sylvaneth or some Auruk.
Maybe we should film a Tzeentch battle report.
Yeah,
soon.
We should.
That we could have a Tzeentch versus Sylvaneth rematch, because I can't remember the last one went. I think I lost.
Excellent. Right, that was a sizable chunk of this podcast gone, but we're not quite finished because we've got our top three coming up next. Age of Sigmar is absolutely filled to the brim with Behemoths. I'm pretty sure every single faction has access to at least one Behemoth. Matt's kind of raising his eyebrow like, is that correct,
Dave? I think it probably is.
I think it probably is. It's maybe some...
Nowadays it is with a new box, I'd say.
Keyword so. Shenanigans, but yeah, I think almost, if not all armies, have got a Behemoth. Anyway, so we decided with the... obviously, we've got the Disciples of Each book. Okay, there's not many Behemoths in that, but the Caradhran Overlords is full of Behemoths. So we thought this week...
Battleline Behemoths as well. In the
Battleline Behemoths. So we decided to go for our top three Behemoths from Age of Sigmar. We'll read out your picks after this segment, but let's do ours first of all. Matt, you look keen to go first, so what is your first choice?
I am poised and ready to go. What could possibly be better than a giant, flying, magical turtle handing out nice auras of save shenanigans?
Well, quite a lot if you're asking for my top three.
It's also got quite a cool ability that Dave likes, the snapping jaws. Is sort of a kind of ability. Yes. It's one of your favourites, isn't it? If you roll, is it roll six to it's six mortal wounds or something
it
like that?
It does a load of damage, doesn't
it? Yeah. And you can get double attacks with some. Yeah.
I think you chomped on some brutes with that turtle.
I did.
You
did six. Yeah, them.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a really, really cool, unusual model. I mean, all the
Idoneth.
The Idoneth stuff with its weird, yeah, the flying through a magical imagined ocean thing.
So Age of Sigmar.
It is, and it works, and it's such a cool model as well. It had a points discount in the December updates, which is good, because hopefully it means we see more of them, because traditionally people don't tend to take them, which is a shame.
I love your turtle.
He did well for me when we went to the Unicorns event. Just giving that extra bit of save to nearby units in the War Scroll Battalion. I think it let a unit re-roll a dice each phase, if I remember rightly. And it looks cool. I know when we went to the doubles.
His DAC is good as well.
His DAC is alright, yeah. We went to the doubles, so I think there was a team with two of them. They went very Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle themes.
Yeah.
What's your turtle called?
Oh, he hasn't got a name. I should name my turtle.
Definitely need to name
it. Maybe Raphael after Raphael. Warhammer TV. Cameraman Supreme.
Yes. Excellent. Jay, what is your third choice?
I'm also going to go Under the Sea as well.
Under the Sea.
And my third choice is the Eidolon of Mathlin.
Oh, nice.
Who, when this model come out, it's such a cool looking model with like the cloak made of like a big waterfall effect, loads of little fish flying off it. Had two builds. This was Eidolon of Mathlin, which I think was my favourite. He's the caster.
There's the aspect of the storms and the aspect of the sea. Is the one's a combat build, one's a caster build.
Is it the storm one that's blind? It's got like a Spartan helmet. Easy close combat, punch things in the face one, isn't it?
Yeah, I like the caster one. But yeah, just a really, really cool, completely different model. It was really, really nice to see that.
And these were, you know, essentially a new elf faction, but completely different.
Yeah.
Mm. Excellent. I found this top three really challenging because there are so many cool Behemoths.
There are.
But my third choice is the Stardrake from the Stormcast Eternals.
Stardrake.
So I painted mine because I loved it so much. Even though its rules, I think for the amount, it has had a points reduction, but I still think he's too expensive. Compared to other big monsters his size, he's not as good. But he's amazing. I mean, I have a soft spot for dragons anyway. A Stormcast Dragon's perfect for me. Such a cool model, such a cool pose. He can do well, but he can also do absolutely nothing, as I found out. He was my first choice. And also, I think he was one of the first Behemoths we saw that was Age of Sigmar.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, he was.
Because
he
came out with the first wave of
There was a second chamber, wasn't it?
Oh, was he the second chamber? Oh, right. Oh, it was the Celestine Prime, was it?
I mean, the first and the second one were very
close.
They were almost released at the same time. But because if I remember right, you had the original Stormcast book, and then very quickly they released
Order Draconis.
Order Draconis, right. Where you had your
Dracoffs,
and your Stardrake as well. So yeah, that's my third choice, the Stardrake. Awesome. Your second choice, Matt.
My second choice, to give him his full title, the Lord of the End Times, the Exalted Grand Marshal of the Apocalypse. Archaon himself.
I thought you were talking about Gordrak then.
Gordrak. on Dorgar, his trusty steed, who is a horse. I always stress that he is riding a horse. I think it's probably is the biggest plastic kit for Age of Sigmar.
£100 must be the most expensive.
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive, awesome kit.
It's bigger than your Exalted Greater Demon.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's such an impressive model. And back in the early days of Sigmar, I thought, oh yeah, I've got to do a Everchosen army. Now at the time, unfortunately, they weren't quite as good as they are now. Luckily, times have changed, and he's all right now. And I think it's good that he's now got a profile that reflects how awesome he looks.
The super villain.
Yeah, he's the big bad. You know, Nagash had a lot of the limelight, but you know, Archeon caused the end of the world. That's pretty impressive.
I'd love to do a battle report: Nagash versus Archeon.
We should do
maybe
it
when your Bone Reapers are finished.
Yeah. Well, we could play through the new Wrath campaign book. Yeah.
Yeah. Wrath of the Everchosen. All ties in.
It does.
All ties in.
Just as planned.
Just as planned. Zeech. Yeah. They know what's happening. Jay, your second choice.
My second choice. Now, back in the day, this was a Behemoth. But compared to the Behemoths of Age of Sigmar, it's not so much a Behemoth anymore. But it's still quite cool. And it's got some nice rules. It's a dinosaur as well, which helps. A teleporting dinosaur.
A teleporting dinosaur
that can then move afterwards.
Clever girl.
It's the Stegodon.
The Stegodon!
Either flavour, the ancient or the regular Stegodon. So obviously the ancient is probably... Well, they've both got the appeal, actually. The ancient's quite good with big Aztec machinery on its back.
Engine of the gods.
Engine of the gods, yeah. And a really cool summoning mechanic on that, where you roll on the tail, a bit like the bell, Skaven bell, you get different effects. But then the regular Stegodon with the blowpipes and the bolt thrower on the front that can teleport around using the Seraphon's abilities, and then it has a Skink Alpha rule which lets it move again. And the model, even though it's a small model, it's actually so detailed and so good. I built one up recently for the Contrast Challenge and painted it up. And it's such a nice kit. I mean, I don't know how old that Stegodon model is.
It's a while now, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it was before the last wave in old Warhammer, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it was in not the last Lizardman Codex, it was in the Lizardman Codex before
fifth,
that.
The sixth edition. Yeah.
Can you imagine if they redid the Stegodon
now? Wow,
Bearing in mind how big things have got.
Yeah.
I think we'd be more likely to see a new dinosaur.
Yeah.
Like a Brachiosaurus.
A Stegodon Prime.
Yeah. Mega Stegodon.
But it's such a cool... And actually, the way you build it as well, so you build the Stegodon itself, and then you build the Howder separately, and it sort of sits on top of it.
Mm.
And it's in, I think it's in two or three different pieces. It's all like rattling along as the Stegodon's moving, and all the skinks are on top balancing and hanging off the edge of it. Such a cool model. I love the Stegodon.
You should revisit your...
Hopefully
they get a new book.
Yeah, I think if they get a new book, I'll definitely add another 1,000 points to them to take them up to 2,000.
Yeah, really good army.
Fun army, yeah.
My second choice is a unit that I don't leave home without with my current Age of Sigmar army, and that is my mega boss on Maw Crusher.
It's a shame he'd end up in a sword, isn't it?
The Cabbage. Yeah, well, he'll get his revenge. I love this model. It was one of the main draws for collecting an Auric War Clans army. When I did the Contrast Challenge, I had one eye on upping it to 2,000 points, and he would be an auto-include. I do like Gordrak, the alternative build as well. It's just you get a bit more options on what you can do with your generic mega boss.
And
he's
done you well in most battles, hasn't he?
He's done me well, yeah. I mean, what I keep saying to people is, if you watch the Warhammer Live video, yes, they did quite poorly in that battle, and Matt absolutely battered me. But off screen, that army has done really well, especially that mega boss. I mean, there was a particular game, I think it may have been a few days before we went to Warhammer World, where he just bossed the battle. You couldn't kill him.
No.
I mean, he did have an ethereal amulet, which helps massively.
But that's it. You've got a big Behemoth that you can't get through a save.
And in the big war, you've got plus one to hit, plus one to wound. So you're hitting on twos. You're wounding on twos. It's only his Rend that really lets him down. I mean, the mount's weapons have got minus two, but he's only minus one. But he's a fantastic model. It's kind of some dragon. It was a dragon
like
at
a
some stage
type thing.
Yeah.
Love it. I think it's such a cool model.
Yeah. I'd like to see. I mean, in some of the artwork recently, I can't remember in box. It might have been in the Auric War Clan book, but it looked like there were the shamans riding on him.
There's a new piece of artwork where it's flying towards. Like your perspective, and yeah, it does look like there's smaller flying creatures. Love to see Aurochs on like some smaller. Well, Aurochs had Wyverns in fantasy, So maybe revisit that a little bit.
Yeah. The good thing with Sigma and the way the release structure works now is that they can invent a few new kits and put out a supplement.
Well, they could always do almost like a psychic awakening version in Age of Sigma, where it pits two factions against each other. They both get a new model each.
Because there's not a ton of. I mean, they've checked with the new Art of War Clans book. Obviously, you've got loads of access to Bone Splitters units, but if you were purely Iron Jaws, you've got a very limited number of units. So yeah, it would be nice in the next 12 months, 18 months, however long, to get a brand new unit to add to your Iron Jaws army.
That'd be cool.
We're round to our top choices, Matt.
So, it was a hard one with Archeon being number two, and we're talking about big models. I had to somehow up the biggest plastic model in the Age of Sigmar Age with the biggest model in the Age of Sigmar Age, and that would be Vorgoroth and Skarlok, the Skull Host of Khorne.
He's a behemoth, isn't he, of course?
A host in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the, sadly, I think, last kits we're going to see from Forge World for Age of Sigmar, because we haven't seen many recently, have we?
No.
And this is something that I've been watching for years. We'd seen this model come in.
We kept seeing it at the open days, didn't we? Work in progress and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think, similar to the Mastodon, I think it was one of those kits that was so big they were struggling with like the structural integrity of it. Yeah. And they weren't sure how to have the. I think originally it had a guy sitting on a throne, where now he's kind of a bit more kind of jaunty angle on top. Kind of
there is a bit of a skull throne there, but yeah, yeah.
And I think it was originally more of a saddle, maybe in the original kind of sculpt. But yeah, it is a gorgeous, gorgeous kit. So nice to paint up. It's really heavy to paint up. I'd recommend building it in sub assemblies if you can, but then you can't really get transitions on the skin and stuff.
Or hitting the gym.
Or hit the gym, if you get the chance to build and paint one, I'd recommend it. It's 1,200 points. In the new Khorne book, you're a little bit limited on what you can do with the rest of the points, but he's pretty cool.
Just Blood Reavers, just all Blood Reavers.
Well, yeah, Blood Reavers, throw in a few characters to buff him.
Yeah.
Essentially, your tactics are buff up the big dragon, throw the big dragon at something, hopefully it kills it, and then rampages the way through the rest of the battlefield.
Yeah.
If that first charge doesn't go off, good game.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the tactics with it. And, you know, anything as simple as charge everything with a massive dragon that's more than half the cost of your army, it's got to be done.
Excellent. Your top choice, Jay.
How can you top the biggest bear moth in the game?
With a bigger bear moth?
No, you can't. That's the biggest bear moth in the game, Dave.
But two
bear moths for the price of one bear moth.
Two for the price of one?
Two bear moths. My favourite bear moth in the game is Alariel. Really, really cool model anyway. Wardroth Beetle, so cool. I wish they did more with it. I mean, they started to with the Arch Revenant that had the little grub thing on its back. The Branch Witch had that little grub thing crawling around its staff. So they are starting to introduce this more fey aspects of Sylvaneth and the more fey insecty, you know, the life of the forest type creatures in. But that Wardroth Beetle with the big antlers at the front and really cool Warhammer community painting scheme you could follow online, the video, to make their really shiny carapace. And then Alariel, like the elvish goddess on the top with the big spear of Kernoth. And it's a big model as well. I mean, it stands quite tall. I don't know if it's probably similar sort of size to Archaon, really.
Yeah, not
sort
far
of competes
off.
Because she has the big wings as well on top.
Mm.
But you don't just get Alariel with all the nice. You get. She can summon another bear moth, the Tree Lord.
Two for the price of one.
Two for the price of one. And the Tree Lord model is so cool as well. I mean, this is a kit that makes three different Tree Lord writers, Spirit of Durfo, the Tree Lord Ancient, the regular Tree Lord, in multiple poses, with all the extras, like the spikes you can put on, flying through everywhere. This is an old kit.
Well, this is it. You've got two kits there that straddle two game systems, Warhammer and Age of Sigmar. And one of the things they did do well with some of the factions is making those old Warhammer units fit in the army. And I think it's something they've fixed with some of the outliers like the Cities of Sigmar, where they're just neat in the edges.
Yeah.
Where from here on out, I think it's all new stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Spirit of Durfu, I think he's my favourite Sylvaneth
with that, the big sword he's got, the Guardian Sword. And he's got the, as well, because, I mean, the Spirit of Durfu in the old world, he was like a really nice tree lord and, you know, he loved all the wood elves. And I think he had a fight with some dwarfs and that's why his face is all on fire. And he's like, he got the fire effect coming through him, he's all scarred and he's just gone crazy then. But I think Durfu was an original metal model, wasn't he?
He was, the original Durfu with the long, lanky arms and the red nails, because it was that era when everything had red on it.
Yeah,
it was a cool model at the time. And yeah, he was like a unique name character. And now it's a shard of
it's
that
a spirit
soul,
Durfu,
isn't it?
Yeah, there's 12 of them or something like that.
I think Durfu would have something to say about climate change.
Yeah,
it's climate change in the age.
Right, that just leaves my top choice. So my top choice is the Caradon Overlord's Ironclad airship. It's amazing. I mean, in the old book, when I had mini games with the Overlords, it was still a must take because I loved the model. But its rules didn't quite match the model and the points cost. But with the new book, it's amazing. But all that aside, it's not really about the rules, this top three. It's all about the model. And I think that model is fantastic. Flying Stand aside, the actual model itself is amazing with the little boarding plank and with all the carbines coming off the side.
The grudge bombs.
Even the anchor, you know, that's floating at the bottom of the ship.
I call it. It's one of those kits that every time you look at it, you spot something new on there. And also you can position the crew around on the deck and things like that.
Yeah.
My favourite
one is an interesting model to look at.
My favourite one's still a converted one in Warhammer World where a giant's like grabbing it and trying to pull it out the
pull
sky.
Pull it away. Yeah, yeah. I think it's a fantastic behemoth.
It's probably one of the most expensive non-character behemoths in the game because it's like 500 plus points, isn't it? There's not many behemoths. I mean, like your Mangler Squig is 200 and something. Your Tree Lords are 180, so it's quite an expensive behemoth.
I've just recently been looking at it on here, so here we go. It is 510 points.
Yes, I don't think there's many behemoths up there that aren't characters like Arcanon or Nagash. I mean, what's a greater demon of siege? 300 points. Yeah.
So I think it's amazing, and the new rules make it even better. So yeah, love it.
How many of them do you want in your list?
Just the one.
Just the one.
It's going to be my flagship, Matt. Yeah. So it's going to have some sort of epic dwarven name, and that is going to be my my flagship.
Amazing.
Yeah. So there you go. That is our top threes. We have got one more segment left on this podcast. We are going to read out your top threes, so keep listening. So let's wrap up this podcast with your top three picks. We're going to start over on Instagram. Cy Paints, it's the Glotkin for me, just an amazing model. I own it even though Nurgle aren't my army. A special mention to the Dread Saurian, though I've never been a fan of the Lizardmen, especially with the new AOS lore for them, but that model is amazing in the flesh. Also, what's not cool about charging a big dinosaur across the battlefield? Now, you've actually played a game with them as your ally.
Yeah, James, Foreign Skulls had a Dread Saurian that he painted up for that event, and actually, it was very effective. It reminds me a little bit of the Vorgraf, the dragon, with the impact it had on the game.
Yeah.
And there were ways to buff it as well. Yeah, it was good.
It's a giant space dinosaur. What's not to love?
That Warhammer Guy 23, his third choice is a dinosaur, but it's a Carnosaur.
Mm. Yeah.
Second choice is the Magmadroff.
Yes.
And the first choice is Scarbrand.
Scarbrand is awesome. I faced Scarbrand. He killed Archaon, which is a shame.
This is the Bloodthirster that's had his wings ripped.
Yeah, he gave Khorne some lip, so Khorne punished him.
What,
you didn't want to annoy Khorne if Khorne's your boss, do you?
If I had a Khorne army, definitely have one of those. Scald painting, third choice, Nagash. Of course. Second, Stardrake, my first behemoth.
Oh, nice.
And his top choice is Archaon, because how cool is Dorgar?
Dorgar's amazing.
Who Matt keeps reminding us is a horse. Daz Brain on Facebook says, I feel I can only go off the models I own, so for me, my first pick has to be Vorgoroth the Scarred and Scarlock
the Scorehost of Khorne.
He starts that sentence like it's going to be like a small behemoth and picks the biggest one in the game. Amazing model. Then it has to be my trusty Bone Grinder Gargant.
Yeah, that's a cool model.
And finally, I think it has to be Drazhof the Ashen.
Yeah, the Chaos Dwarf guy and the Flying Taurus.
Yes.
That's a cool model too.
Chief Unicorn Craig says, for looks, his third choice is the Carnosaur, second choice the Magmadroff, and first choice L'Oreal. However, if you're judging it by what they do,
Then his third choice would be Vampire Lord on Zombie Dragon. A Moor Crusher is a second choice. And Marathi, of course, he's a big Dawn of the King fan, as his top choice.
Marathi's only half a bear moth.
He also comments that sadly there is no option for a giant purple sparkle unicorn yet.
There should be.
There should be. Ben Johnson, are you listening?
So Andy Wood said the mighty Ale Guzzler Gargant. It's not the biggest kit anymore, but it's still a cool kit.
These are like the bear moths you remember when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Like the old dreadnought in the Space Marine Army. Oh, there's a dreadnought there, what am I going to do? And now it's like, oh, it's just a dreadnought.
Number two, the giant turtle. And three, the rogue idol.
Yes, I do like the rogue idol.
Immortan Joe, just look at the models. Number one, the Moor Crusher. Number two, the Lord Screech Vermin King.
Oh, yeah.
Number three, Nagash. They didn't play AOS yet, but the models alone make them want to play.
Do
it. Joe, do it. It's an awesome game. Pete Allison, the Stonehorn / Thundertusk. Though originally for Warhammer, it was cutting edge in what would become the norm for Behemoth. And you know what? This is another kit that still stands up in the current aesthetic of the game.
This was going to be an honourable mention for me.
Yeah. The Mortar kit, Neferata, Manfred and Arkin. Is that another honourable mention for you?
That would have been another honourable mention.
Well, they're all fantasy models as well.
They are, yeah. End times, they were, weren't they?
Yeah.
And then the Caradron Ironclad, because steampunk Erdwarden. Well, you can't argue with that.
To be fair, some of the artwork I've seen for the Ironclad, not the Ironclad, just the Caradrons, there's some cool, is it the Thunderers with the long rifles and things?
Yeah, the aftershock
rifles. They look so good. Yeah. Really, really cool.
Fabius Fulgrim says, the Big Turtle, the Lord of Change, and the Keeper of Secrets. Some good choices there. War Chief Baz says, the Giant Turtle three times. There's some love for the Leviathan.
Yeah.
Dave Bass says Go Trek all three spots. Yeah. I think he's a bear moth. He's a little small for that.
I can attest that he is a bear moth in the game.
Hugh says the Dread Saurian, Titanic size monster eating star demon. Of course it is. Jordan J. Cleave says the Ironclad, the Keeper of Secrets, and the Giant Turtle Guy. And then finally, Mr. Behemoth himself, Ben Johnson, says third place the Keeper of Secrets, second place the Moor Crusher, and at first the Star Drake.
I'm surprised Steam Tank didn't make it into his list.
Yeah.
He does like a Steam Tank or four.
Or eight.
Or eight, however many he's got in his list.
So yeah, thank you all for sending in your top threes. I really want to build some Behemoths now.
Yeah, yeah, so do I. Let's just go home and build some Behemoths.
We should have one Behemoth each. Battle Royale.
A Behemoth.
Yeah.
I do want to, and maybe I should do this in the next couple of weeks, just in case we get some games of Age of Sigmar in. We've always toyed with doing a Realm of Beasts game and actually having the beasts roaming around. Yeah. And I've got a zombie dragon to paint that I can bring along.
See, I've got a, I can't remember what it's called.
Mongol,
yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I've got a Mangler Squig.
Let's do it. Let's have a Realm of Beasts massive, ridiculous battle with lots of beasts.
Definitely. So whilst we prepare for that massive battle of beasts, thank you for listening to the podcast. We'll be back again next week where we'll be talking about the Caradron Overlord book, and also we'll have a brand new top three.
So with the Caradrons coming out, we thought it was a good time to talk about our top three Dwadin style models. So we're going to open this up a little bit so we can get the 41st Millennium in on the act. Any stumpy, slightly plump models.
Vertically challenged
models that we've got. So, dwarves, dwadin, squats, halflings we'll have in there as well.
Rattlings.
It's basically the mirror of your top three bear moths.
Pretty much.
Your top three midgets.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we want to know which ones you love, which ones you'd like to see come back maybe as well.
So get those into us. All the social media links will be at the end of the podcast. Thank you once again for your support and for listening. And tune in again next week.
Bye.
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 Thank you for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. If you like what you've been listening to, please do give us a share and a comment if you're listening via Apple Podcasts. For further content, please check out spruesandbrews.com, and you can contact us on Twitter @spruesandbrews or over on Facebook, facebook.com/spruesandbrews.